Here's a guy that's done, dare I say, just about everything someone can do in the world. And you guys are kindred spirits, Domino. You and John Taffer, I would imagine, both bartenders.
Yeah, from the Northeast with I would guess a little bit of attitude. But you told me where his first sort of name job was, the Troubadour.
Well, he started as a bartender at Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood. He was a drummer in a band as well. Okay. And then his first bar management job was at the Troubadour West Hollywood.
I don't know what he had to clean up and what was happening there, but I'd imagine legendary happenings at the Troubadour.
Well, he'll tell us right now. John Taffer joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on The Fan. John, thanks for coming on. How you doing?
Great to be here, guys. Great Troubadour memories as you were talking.
Well, listen, I really, God bless everything that you got going on now, but if you're working the Troubadour in 1981, I'm not sure if you can do it in 10 words or less, but could you describe to people who don't know the Troubadour what the Troubadour was in 1981?
Sure. It was probably one of the most famous rock and roll nightclubs in the world. And around 1980, 81 was when the, sort of the punk movement started. Mm-hmm. So bands like Fear, Black Flag, Adam Ant, those were the kind of bands that were playing then. And then it evolved into the Knack, from punk into sort of the Knack new wave thing. But everybody, it was anybody, played at the Troubadour. It broke the career of place. People like Elton John, Bruce Springsteen, all these people started at the Troubadour.
And no matter what the year, no matter what the decade, I would imagine it's a little more challenging now to steal, but you have to assume that the staff is going to steal, and that was essentially the situation when you were there before you took over in 81, correct?
It was. It was all rock and roll people. All musicians worked in the kitchens, the bars, the sound rooms, everywhere. And they would literally cut a chunk of steak off a strip line and just put it in a bag and take it home. There were no controls. There were no rules. And when I took over the Troubadour, there was 3 inches of water on the floor. It was flooded. So we had shipping pallets that we put on the floor because we didn't have the money back then. So we walked over the water until we had the 25th anniversary of the Troubadour. I believe it was 81, and everybody came back. George Carlin, Bruce Springsteen, Jackson Brown, out and back. And during that month, we made back the money to fix the plumbing and remodel the club.
Now, in the movie, the Elton John movie, the Troubadour is the place where they actually do that whole scene. That's the Troubadour where this whole thing, the legend of Elton John, really broke, correct, in the States?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was where we broke him. And Doug Weston, who owned the Troubadour at the time, he's since passed. Doug had an amazing ear, and he'd sit at home and he'd listen back then to these reel-to-reel tapes. And there were no pictures, there were no videos back then, and just based upon the way the tape sounded, Doug would either book them at the Troubadour or not, and the record labels would all hang out at the Troubadour. So if you played at the Troubadour, you had a chance to be seen by the right people. And that's what happened to Elton and Linda Ronstadt and a bunch of people at that time.
John Taffer is with us. Bar Rescue is the show. We'll talk more about the show and maybe some advice you may have for people that are opening back up after this pandemic ceases to a certain extent. But we got to ask you about the NFL Sunday ticket. I was surprised. I didn't know that you were one of the guys behind this ticket as we know it today.
Yeah, that's true. My company was retained back in the mid-90s by a company called ComSat, which is a satellite management company in Maryland. And they hired us to do a feasibility study for what was then called out-of-market sports programming. So sitting in Atlanta, you guys could buy, let's say, the Dallas Cowboys signal, and you could get that on your TV at home, was the way the program was originally designed. So my company did the feasibility study on it, and then they came back to us and they said, design the product, John. So we designed the product, and something called compression started just then. And compression is the ability to put multiple transponders on one dish. You guys might remember sports bars back then. If you wanted 7 football games, you had to have those big 7 analog dishes. You almost needed a half an acre of grass behind your bar for all of those dishes back then. Well, Sunday Ticket compression allowed it to be one small satellite on the dish on the roof that would accept multiple signals. So we wrote that business plan, and we wrote some other things for it and put it together. And ComSat brought it to the NFL to license it with my work and gave my work to the NFL. Well, the NFL said, this is pretty great. Let's do it ourselves. They put me on a board of NFL Enterprises, and it became Sunday Ticket.
Who owned the, I don't know, proprietary rights, or how did that whole thing work? If you worked for a company, did you basically sell it at that point, or did somebody kind of take it from you?
No. No. I did the market research and put it together as a paid consultant.
Okay.
My company did. They brought it to the NFL to license it because the NFL owns the signals. NFL said, nope, we'll do it ourselves, and let's put this guy Taffer on the board to help us do it. And so it's always been owned and operated by the NFL. I'm just one of the people who worked on it in the beginning. And I must say, I got paid well when I worked on it, but I did not own it.
John Taffer is with us. What's the biggest mistake, if you could single out one, that people make when a bar starts to fail?
Well, to build it for yourself is probably the biggest mistake people make. They separate their own taste from the taste of their customers, and that's a serious problem.
And, of course, you need to, I guess, not fight City Hall when it comes to whatever people prefer. My brother owned a restaurant for years, for instance, and he would fight with people that wanted pineapple on their pizza. And I would tell him, just let them have the pineapple on the pizza. You're not eating it. They're paying you for the product.
Well, that's what I mean. That's when operator ego gets in the way. You do what the customers want, not what you want. And we get paid to say yes, not no. So with an attitude like that, you can't possibly succeed.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, actually, he's known that now after the pizzeria went away.
Yeah, he doesn't have it any longer. I can't argue that point.
So, John, what are the numbers? Yeah. What, you know, I think people, if they have a little bit of money or they actually say, what would we like to do? Well, I'd like to own a bar. Yeah, I'd like to own a bar, but I'd imagine it's not a winning lottery ticket most often.
Oh, everybody thinks, oh, bars are so profitable, man. They put in a dollar worth of booze and they sell it for $8. It's unbelievable. All they make is money. Well, what about the rent? What about the payment of employees? What about utilities? What about dram shop and other liability insurance and glassware and cleaning? And bars make about 12% profit. So of every dollar we spend, they make about 12 cents. If we don't manage labor costs right, if people steal a little bit, if suddenly, you know, there's a couple of weeks of bad weather, various things happen, that 12% can disappear pretty quickly.
Can I tell you?
Bars are not inherently profitable. You got to make them profitable.
I, with all due respect to anybody else who might be listening who happened to be a boss of mine afterwards, smartest guy I ever worked for, smartest guy. I worked in a hotel bar, and it was a bar. It was a nightclub bar in a hotel in New Jersey. And he told us, there were three bartenders that basically worked the main shifts on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. I was going to school at the time. One of you steals, you're all fired. And we all had to look at each other and go, are we willing to actually have that happen? He would give us X amount of drink tickets a night, and he would say, use them wisely, gentlemen. This is you stealing from me, but I'm telling you it's okay. So make sure you're giving drinks to the people who are going to tip you afterwards. It was the smart, and by the way, we believed him. He would have fired all three of us right there on the spot. He would have cleaned out the whole house. That was the smartest thing I've ever heard a guy that I worked for say, because he sold it the way he needed to. I can go replace you.
Yeah, I would have said the same thing, honestly, and give you the same comp tickets. And every bartender would get a certain amount a night, and they put them in a register.
Yep.
And if I see, I would take it a step further. If I see you giving that free drink to a friend of yours rather than a good customer, you're going to hear from me.
Right.
So remember, these are our drinks to give away, not your drinks to give away. We would manage it in that kind of a way.
John Taffer is with us. Obviously, you live in Las Vegas. Everything is horrifyingly shut down, something we never thought we would see in Las Vegas. Eventually, I think whatever the new normal is, we'll get back to it. What's the advice you can give to bar owners, club owners, as slowly but surely we start to move in the right direction?
Well, you know, the greatest advice I could give you is pay a lot of attention as to when you want to open. Remember, we're spending a lot of money sustaining this. And if we don't have the resources to open properly with inventory, training, a little energy, a little marketing and stuff, we're going to fail. And I'm concerned that too many operators, bars, nightclubs, and restaurants are spending so much resources sustaining themselves during this, trying to do delivery and losing money, trying to keep employees paid and losing money, that we might not have the resources to reopen. So I say to a lot of them, just because the state has reopened doesn't mean you need to. You can wait a few weeks. Put your ducks in a row, make sure your resources are in place, save that money from sustaining it, and have a real opening, and have an opening with impact 2 or 3 weeks later. You'll be ahead of all the other venues if you open with energy rather than just open with everyone else.
I'm not looking to
I'm building a restaurant now in Alpharetta, guys. So mine opens in July. So I'm in the middle of this, and we're in the middle of construction right now. But the first Taffer's Tavern in America opens in Alpharetta in July.
Did not know that.
Yeah,
now we do,
on.
And we'll get the word out there.
What do you believe the city of Alpharetta needs from you, John? What kind of establishment are we talking about here?
Well, it's a tavern, It has incredibly high quality food at good prices. It's the Taffer Safe Dining System. It's all sous vide and computerized and robotic cooking. It is completely safe. It's untouched by human hands. The price, wait till you see it, guys. It's pretty wonderful. I'll make sure we invite you to the opening. But you'll see it in the news, and a lot of local advertising will start in July. But we open end of July. It's called Taffer's Tavern. It's a national franchise, and we're very excited to put it in Alpharetta. It's a great little town, guys. I mean, we're right there at the park, right by City Hall. It's a wonderful little community.
John, do you worry about the robots eventually taking over? I've seen the movies.
No, I give them one comp ticket, nice. And I tell them, guys, don't steal from me. And I give them their comp ticket, and we're okay.
Even the robots understand that.
Right, that's brilliant. Yeah, I'm not looking to put you on the spot. Do you know the name Frankie's from a sports bar point of view that was here in Atlanta? Do you know Frankie's?
I might know the name, yeah, but I've heard of Frankie's before, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, Frankie's was like the, I think it was USA Today, it might have been the sports bar of the year once or twice. When I tell you in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, it was the place. And I think the point is, I think everybody thought that they could do that. I think there was this boom in, hey, man, all we have to do is that, and we'll call it Jimmy's, or we'll call it whatever the hell we have to. And you can't. It doesn't work that way.
No, you got to give people a reason to come back, and you need the resources to do it properly. Right now, with the amount of seating that we can put in restaurants, it might make sense to wait a few weeks. Hold your resources back and then open with a bang. Just because you can open right now doesn't mean you should open right now. And I'm not saying don't open right now. For some restaurants, that's the right move. But for other restaurants, it's not the right move. You're better off waiting a few weeks, marketing it, promoting it, opening with a bang, having all your sanitation and PPE ducks in a row, and really open in a meaningful and impactful way. And don't get lost in a crowd. So I put that thought into a lot of operators' heads. They got to figure out which route is best for them.
I've said this a lot. I would rather sit at a bar and eat than actually sit at a table. I don't really care about a place that reservations and everything else. You give me good bar food, I'll sit at the bar, I'll watch your TVs. Conversation and the idea that the staff, especially bartenders, building a relationship to get people back in, how important is that stuff?
Well, that's critical. You know, we call it connective tissue, but, you know, we teach three things in our business. We teach personal dynamics, which is the presence of yourself in a very dynamic way. We teach interactive dynamics, the actual skill of making you feel good, the skill of making you feel important, of interacting with you, of making you smile. And those interactive dynamics are very, very important elements of teaching. Look, you can get a burger any place. Why not go to the place that makes you feel good? And that's the business that we're in. You'll walk past three hamburger places to go to the one that you like. And maybe the burger isn't better. There's just something about the experience that you like. And that's our business, guys. We got to connect. And he or she who connects the greatest tends to win.
John Taffer is with us. Bar Rescue is the show. Taffer's Tavern, as he told us, is going to be coming in the summer to Alpharetta. You're also doing a podcast. You're also now doing something called Marriage Rescue, are you not?
Yeah, we are. Marriage Rescue. We finished our first season on Paramount, and it was a lot of fun. Boy, it was very different than rescuing bars. But you know what?
I would imagine.
Bars, hold on. Do
you
know
that 9 out of 10 times it's a relationship issue, so there is a commonality to it.
Do you know that there's no business that was better suited to come out of a pandemic in terms of more people needing more help in one subject than this possibly? That whole marriage thing, people being together this many hours?
Yeah. You know, it's fun. It's gone one of two ways for you. Either you've really enjoyed the time or you're ready to rip your eyes out. It's one of the two based upon the marriage that you have, right?
There's no gray area. John Taffer, we appreciate the time, and hopefully we'll see you in the summertime when Taffer's Tavern comes to Alpharetta. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, guys. Nice to talk to you. Be well.